Good evening. Most of you remembered. Those of you that weren't here this morning, I need energy. And those of you that came to Truth for Youth, I apologize because the talk tonight is another one. I was asked to do another one that I did there. So there'll be duplication for those of you that came to Truth for Youth, and I apologize. Before I start, some of you asked me about my DVDs, and so I just wanted to show you two things. Number one was this DVD that we have, and the gold one called WMI. Some of you asked me about that. That is where I take people out into the dinosaur fields. Next year, July 18, if you can, come on over to America, come to Glendive, Montana. We will go out and we will dig dinosaur bones together. Because when people tell me, well, the dinosaur bones prove millions of years. Really? Have you ever dug them? Have you ever gone and seen them in the rock and seen what they look like? And come on and let's go do it. And so I take people out there. But what I did is a lot of folks can't go. So we went out and we filmed it. But we did it as a documentary, so it's not like your typical standing up here lecturing type thing. And it's me taking you out in the field, but then taking you in the museum that they have there and that sort of a thing. And I just got a little promo a minute that I'll show it to you so you get the idea of what it looks like. Because again, it's not your talking head lecture. This is one that we really wanted to go after a younger generation who probably is not going to sit and watch a talking head lecture. You know what I'm saying, okay? Think about the amazing beauty and complexity that we see in the world around us. How is it that so many people can understand these things so differently when we're all looking at the same evidence? I've always thought that when we're asked a question, we should question the question. What are we doing now?
Well, we're going to see about checking out some dinosaur bones. I'd like to have you do some digging on this.
No way.
A screwdriver?
Where's my big old hammer?
We are constantly being bombarded by the perspective of the world. You might be wondering, what is a worldview? Who or what is impacting your worldview?
It's starting to petrify. This is all stone right here. So this is still real, live, it would burn type wood.
Wow. I can hear some of you laughing, but think about this. If there is no God, then that is the only alternative. This is amazing, man. I can't wait to get inside. So that kind of gives you the idea. It's done in that format. But that piece of wood that you saw there, let me do a little bunny trail for you. Those of you that were here this morning, ADD, you know it. Poster child for ADD. Yes. Any teachers in here? Any teachers? I will spend the rest of my life apologizing to teachers. I was your worst nightmare. I want you to think of your worst student ever. Put them on steroids. They don't come close. My head is always going. That petrified wood that we found was really cool because we were just out looking dinosaur bones and talking. But then we found this wood, and it's embedded in the Hell Creek Formation, which is really unique. If anybody that loves to dig dinosaur bones, Hell Creek Formation is like a treasure trove. And it's very few places on the planet where you can get access to it because typically it's under a lot of other rock. But in this area, it's actually exposed. And so it was embedded in the Hell Creek Formation. And according to the evolutionary model, that's 68 to 70 million years old. And you saw that wood. The center was completely, totally petrified. The top was 95% petrified. And when we flipped that log over, it was still wood. How does wood last 68, 70 million years and not rot? Maybe there's another explanation. Just saying. So that's the kind of stuff that we do in there. And some of you asked me about the USB. I forgot the talks were on there, so I just put them up there. The one that I was supposed to do tonight is recorded on there. Remote Control 2 is another one. A Universe from Nothing, which is a version of what I'm doing tonight. It's a version. Juan, my other speaker, is he's quite a bit different than I. And so Titanic, which what has God up to, which God, and Epic. So there's seven talks in that USB. And again, thank you. It's donation. I'm asking you to help me with that. And my brother brought some more stuff here, so I actually have more stuff there this morning, or than I had this morning, so thank you for bringing that, Trevor. But tonight, we get to deal with Richard Dawkins. This is not mean-spirited. I don't hate Richard Dawkins. Matter of fact, I pray for Richard Dawkins. When he had his heart attack, I prayed for him. Because let's be honest, from a Christian perspective, from a biblical worldview, everybody is going to spend eternity somewhere, one of two places, heaven or hell. And if you reject Jesus Christ, then there's a place called hell that I believe is real, and I don't want anybody to go to. And that's where he's headed. So I pray for him. And I was hoping that that heart attack that he had, I was praying that that was really a wake-up call. So it's not mean-spirited, but I think we need to deal with it. And so I just kind of call this something from nothing, because guys, this is reality, something from nothing. This is a core issue. This is a foundational issue. And I have a subtitle. I put it like this, and you think we've got the problem. Okay, and let me try and move out of the way over here so folks can see the screen a little bit better. Fill in the blank. In the beginning, there's more options. Exactly. You see, ultimately, guys, we got to understand this. It comes down to a core issue. It's not an evidence problem. It's a spiritual problem. Christian and non-Christian all have the same evidence. We've got the same stars, the same rocks, the same people. But we understand this stuff so differently, not because of evidence, but because of interpretation of evidence. And there's only two ways that we got everything that we see today. Sometimes I have young people, especially the college ones, will come up and say, well, if your God created everything, then who created your God? Have any of you ever heard that? My response is, what does purple taste like? What? What does red smell like? Well, that's a stupid question. So is yours. Hey, look, you want to play games? Do it on somebody else's dime. When you get serious, because see, people want to play games and they love to ask these questions and it's a game and let me trip you up and all that. And I'm not into playing games, all right? If you're serious, I'll stay all night. I legitimately will stay all night with people that are serious. But when it's a game, I'm not going to play games. Now, can I answer the question? Yes, I can. And I will when they're serious. And here's the reality. Understand this. Christian and non-Christian, we both have an issue. Christian and non-Christian both require something to have existed for all eternity, have no beginning, right? That's reality. Something has to have existed for all eternity. Which one makes the most sense? In the beginning, nothing turned into something, which was dead initially. And then that dead thing eventually turned into a living thing, which turned into another living thing, which turned into a bunch of living things, and we all got here. From naturalistic processes, just given enough time, right circumstances, hydrogen gas can turn itself into everything. So think about this. In the non-Christian worldview, in the beginning, gas. Oh, by the way, that's three letters and it begins with the letter G. And by the way, our Creator also has three letters. Begins with the letter G, but it's a capital G. His name is God. Which one makes the most sense? Do you know how your building got here, guys? I, you know, since you have been so kind to me over the years, I did some research on this. This building was built 115 years ago. Did you know that? Did you know how it was built? There used to be a lumber mill over there, and there was an explosion in that lumber mill, and all those boards flew over here and just kind of settled down and built this building, and people just moved into it because it was like, hey, what a great building this explosion in a lumber mill made. Do you believe my research? I hope not. You know that's ridiculous. But guys, you're looking at a building which, let's be very honest, this is not like crazy complex. You and I could figure out how to build something like this. Look at a mirror. Look at a mirror. Look at the heavens. The heavens declare the glory of God. Which one makes the most sense? In the beginning, God, who has no beginning, has no. Who created my God? Nobody. That's what the scripture says. He's the Alpha, he's the Omega. He has no beginning, he has no end. He is outside of time, he transcends time. He created time, so therefore he's not bound by it. In the beginning, God, or in the beginning, gas. You got two options. And if you got gas, there's medicine that will help with that, but I'm not gonna go there, okay? So the way that I figured was, let me go to the guys who love to attack and mock Christianity. And I am in advance, I'm telling you right now, I will use some sarcasm tonight, yes, but it's not mean-spirited. I'm going to try and keep you awake, so I admit it. And I'm going to take the guys and let them speak for themselves, because, hey, I'm not a PhD scientist. If you guys were here the first time I was here a number of years ago, you had the guy that came after me, and it was great, okay? I'm not a PhD, I'm not going to lie to you. I grew up around guys with one name, Crusher, Bruiser, Mauler, Assassin. My father was a professional wrestler, full disclosure. But you know what? Even though I may not have a PhD, growing up in that household taught me how to see through facades. Because I grew up around people that on stage were one thing, and then you saw them off stage, and it's like, oh, hold up, there's something's not right here. So I've learned how to smell fake and fraud. And I think these guys are throwing a bunch of fraud at us, and so I'll call it out. You hold me accountable and see if what I'm saying is lining up with the facts. But let's let them speak for themselves. Lawrence Krauss and Richard Dawkins went on a, I call it a love fest tour. Okay, because they went to the very friendly places and everybody was oohing and aahing and just kind of slobbering on themselves because here's Richard Dawkins and Lawrence Krauss. They were selling a new book that Lawrence Krauss had just written. Now, you know some of the books that Richard Dawkins has written. I mean, The God Delusion and all those. I mean, they're big. He sold a lot more books than I've read. Okay. And then Lawrence Krauss, this was the book they were selling on this tour, A Universe from Nothing. Wow. They have the answer on how you get something from nothing. So, Carl, you better pay attention. Don't mock. A universe. Why there is something rather than nothing, a universe from nothing. How do we deal with it? And by the way, it's not just Lawrence Krauss that teaches or Richard Dawkins that teaches that something came from nothing. This is science, period, at its core. This is a belief that has to be there. Professor Alexander Villenkin, take a listen to what he has to say.
There is one answer that appears to avoid this problem. The idea is that the universe could be spontaneously created out of nothing.
Okay, so the universe could be created spontaneously out of nothing. How do we get that? Well, let's keep taking a look at this stuff and let's make sure. Out of nothing. By the way, I'm a simple man. What does nothing mean? Can somebody define nothing for me, please? Just to make sure that I understand what nothing is. Anybody care to give a guess on?
The absence of anything.
The absence of anything. Any other definitions? Bam.
Break the word down to no thing.
No thing. Okay. I've got another definition. Can I show it to you? Come on, you're going to have to play along. Can I show it to you? Okay. I like this one because I got a physicist, not a Christian, a physicist to define nothing. Right? Don't take me, son of a professional wrestler.
Floyd doesn't believe he can get his taxes done for nothing. So we brought in Dr. Michio Kaku to explain exactly what we mean by nothing.
Nothing is the absence of something. Zero is absolutely nothing.
So it costs nothing?
Well, it costs you zero, which is nothing.
Nothing.
So do we now feel comfortable with the definition for nothing? You know, it doesn't take a genius to do your taxes. How about this? It doesn't take a genius to figure out that you don't get something from nothing. Seriously. But let's deal with it. And this is his definition, Dr. Michio Kaku. Nothing is the absence of something. So right on the money. Good job. Now let's go to the Love Fest tour and let's listen to Richard Dawkins and Lawrence Krauss explain how we get something from nothing. Okay? You ready for this? Here we go.
In the context of evolution, what something from nothing means to you?
Charles Darwin solved one of the greatest riddles that the human mind has ever solved, which is how you get something from nothing in the sense of how you get the immense complexity and diversity and beauty and elegance of life, and perhaps above all, how you get the powerful illusion of design that life shows, starting not quite from nothing, but starting from extreme simplicity.
Did I just go into the wrong room? We're selling a book called A Universe From... And then right out of the chute, in the context of evolution, by the way, when you see people play word games, yellow flag should go up on you, okay? God says, let your yes be, yes. And your no. You see, when people have to play word games, there's something not right about it, okay? And so that's what I always feel kind of like when somebody gets up and they give this, oh, tap dance, I'm not going for it, okay? I'm a skeptic. I just think God is pretty simple and pretty straightforward. His word is pretty simple and straightforward. In the context of evolution, what does something from nothing mean? What? Why do you have to throw in the context of anything? What does something from nothing mean, period? In context of whatever? You have to explain how you got something from nothing if you're going to sell me a book on a universe from nothing. All right? And then he goes on, what does something from nothing mean to you? And I love this response. I mean, Charles Darwin solved how you get something from nothing. May I please, with all due respect, ask you a simple, humble question. What did Charles Darwin discover? No, he discovered something. What did he discover?
Adaptation.
Speciation. Beaks changing on finches. Finches that had big beaks and little beaks, and then you get changes in population based on environment. How does that explain something from nothing? Am I missing something? And I'm dead serious here. If I am missing something, help me understand how this explains something from nothing. Let me go to a non-Christian for a second here, okay? This is a non-Christian. The theory of evolution, only creationists call it Darwin's theory, just for your information, deals with changes in populations, okay? Deals with changes in populations. Is that something from nothing? It's starting with something. It's starting with populations. It says that given a starting population, hold up, that's not something from nothing. So what did Charles Darwin prove that has anything to do with something from nothing? Nothing. Okay? That's not nothing. And watch as you continue on. That starting population is an objective fact. We can see it in the fossil record. Amen. Come with me. Let's go dig dinosaur bones. I will show you the fossils in the dirt. You will see them. You will touch them. You will break them. Because when you first pull them out of the ground, many times they're just like crumbly, just dust. And then once they dry out, then they become solid. Guys, you can see something in the fossil record. What is not an objective fact is that the changes that supposedly happened. We don't see that. That's another talk. It's a fossil talk. And I'm telling you, go check on it for yourself. I used the last time I was here when I got challenged that first time here. You didn't talk about the fossil record. So what did I do? I pulled out the secular phylogenetic charts, the family trees, their family trees. Look. And here's where there's nothing, and this is where evolution is supposed to have happened, and these are your charts. You don't have to be a PhD scientist to look at these things and critically evaluate them. He goes on to continue, says this, further, the theory of evolution says nothing at all about where that population came from. It could be spontaneous generation, big word for it, aliens or a deity. Whoa, hold up. It could be a deity? It really doesn't matter. Yes, it does. Let me cut to the chase. If you are created in the image of God, then you are fearfully, wonderfully made, then you have value and purpose because God created you, lived, gave you life, and then died for you when you were spitting on him. That matters. And if there is no God, then you are nothing more than a product of random chance processes over millions of years. You're just a couple of cells. Remember this morning? My feeling of suffering, of horror, is more than just getting rid of a couple of cells. You are not a couple of cells. You're fearfully, wonderfully made. You're created in the image of God. That's where your value comes from. You lose that history, you lose that value. It does matter. Spontaneous generation uses many of the same ideas as evolution, but it's a completely separate theory. I agree. It is completely separate, and it actually fits with what we see in the world better than something from nothing. And then we had the big revelation. We're at the Something for a Universe from Nothing conference, selling our book. It's a powerful illusion design that shows, you know what, I love illusions. I really do. I love illusions. And I think this is a perfect choice of words right here, because what I see in evolution is what I saw.
Do you presume to criticize the great Oz? You ungrateful creatures, think yourselves lucky that I'm giving you audience tomorrow instead of 20 years from now.
Oh.
The great Oz has spoken.
Oh.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. The great Oz has spoken.
Who are you?
Oh, I am the great and powerful Wizard of Oz.
Remember? This is exactly what I see when I see these guys get out here and start blowing smoke. Intimidating, mocking, ridiculing, name-calling. But then you're going to answer how you got something from nothing with this simple statement, a starting not quite from. Am I missing something? Newsflash, that's not nothing. You're selling a book called The Universe from Nothing. As a minimum, you know, I was asked, what would you say if you ever met Richard Dawkins? And you know, the thing that I would say is, I appreciate what you've done because you have helped me in my ministry to critically think. I mean that. He's helped me to critically evaluate, to look at things. And then I would also ask, am I missing something here? But when you go out on a book tour selling a book called A Universe from Nothing, and then you make in your very first statement that it's not quite from nothing, isn't there a little bit of hypocrisy in there? Isn't there a little bit of, you're claiming Christians are these guys that are lying and cheaters and charlatans and all this sort of a thing, and then I listen to this, and this is exactly what I feel. I've been duped. And not in a mean-spirited way. I'd honestly like to see if I'm missing something. But starting from extreme simplicity. Now, I'm a simple guy. What is extreme simplicity? I really would love to know what extreme simplicity is. So let's take a listen.
So getting something from nothing, Charles Darwin gives us all confidence. Charles Darwin showed that what must have seemed the most difficult problem of getting something from nothing was soluble. He solved it, and his successors have been simply fleshing out his explanation ever since. But after Darwin, it's no longer possible for anybody, any reasonable person, to say, oh, I simply can't believe you could get something so complicated as that.
By the way, I didn't cut anything out. This is one continuous clip. I'm not trying to chop and make him look bad. I'm not doing it. What did Charles Darwin do to help me understand how you got something from nothing? I know this is his home country. I get it. He's on your money. I get it. He showed it was possible to get something from nothing. How did he do that? Honestly, help me understand that. And by the way, I understand there's this big to-do in England right now. The vegans are very upset about the $5 or £5 bill because of animal product and all that. If you didn't know, I actually am a vegan, and so I've decided to help you guys out. I am taking all £5 bills, I am collecting them, and I am going to dispose of them in a proper manner. So make sure to give me those things because we need to get rid of them. This is what I feel like, man, when I watch this. Darwin showed it's possible to get something from nothing. What did he discover? That finches, their beaks change depending on the environment and what was going on. And that traits could get passed on from something to something else. How's that prove something from nothing? You're not reasonable if you don't believe that gas turned into something which came from nothing, but turned into something which was dead, then turned into something alive, which then turned into amoeba, which turned into a worm, which grew legs to crawl out of the land, to become an amphibian, to turn into a rat, to turn into a wolf, to go back into the ocean, become a blue whale. You're not reasonable if you don't believe that. Have you looked at the fossil record for those things? I have. And some of the things that they show you as transitional forms between wolf-like animal and whales, go look at the actual bones. Don't look at the reconstructions that they give you. There's one guy that sells out of University of Michigan. He has the thing, Ambulocetus, and it has the nose holes. They're migrating because a mammal, dogs, wolves, their nose holes are on the very tip of their nose. Look at Ambulocetus. It's migrating up a third of the way up the snout because the whale, their nostrils on their head. So you have to have something migrating. They have Ambulocetus, and it's amazing. But there's only one problem. Go look at what they actually found for Ambulocetus. They did not find the front third of the snout. He put the snout on there and put the nose holes a third of the way up there. They have no evidence for that. They know that it was a swimmer in the water because it had a tailbone, a single tailbone, which was found 15 feet above the rest of the bones. Hello, according to the evolutionary model, slow gradual processes, deposition builds up. 15 feet is a lot of time. And you're going to take one tailbone from up there, put it down here, and put them together and tell me you got a missing link? Guys, know what they have. Don't run and hide from this stuff. You know, I've got a little flyer back there, and I will ask you to help me with this. It's called Academy of Hope. When I get back from here, September 6th, 5th, we're starting classes, online classes. And my first class that I have on there is a 16-week class if you want college credit, okay? But you don't want it because I don't think you're going to go to American, take a college over there. But you can take it for 14 weeks and just do it for the information. And it's 10 to 15 minute video lessons, and then some studying. And we go through the whale evolution charts, and we show Richard Dawkins the ones that he uses to show, look, this is whale evolution. We go through each and every one of them. Know what they had. Know what the actual evidence shows. Pray for me. If you know any Christian schools, homeschool associations, and those types of things, please take some of those little flyers and spread them around for me. I need help to get this word out. When you look at the actual evidence, you're not going to run and hide from this stuff.
But I think you're not being fair to Darwin. I think in a sense it's something from nothing. I mean, completely nothing. In the sense that every time a new... take humans. We weren't around perhaps more than maybe 5 to 10 million years ago. And so, in a sense, every time a new species is created, it's something from nothing.
There you go. Okay? Let's break this down. Lawrence Krauss, these are his words. It's not being fair to Darwin. It is something from nothing. Absolutely nothing. That's exactly what he said. Completely nothing. Every time a new species is created, it's something from nothing. So now you thought you were coming to sit and listen. It doesn't work that way with me. It's interaction time. You tell me, how would you answer that? We have a generation that's getting beat up, all right? They're getting beat up. 50 to 88% of the kids in my country raised in the church are gone by the time they're age 18 because they don't know how to think. They've been taught what to think. They've been taught to check boxes, and that's Christianity. That is not Christianity. That's legalism. Ma'am.
We have to distinguish between species and kinds, because species are within kinds, and kinds always reproduce after the same kind.
Okay.
So a species has to be within a kind.
Okay.
So it's not something from nothing.
All right. Anybody else? How would you answer that? How would you teach your child, your grandchild, to answer that in a school system where they're told that it is something from nothing? Every time we get a new species, hey, it wasn't there before, it's here now, that's something from nothing.
Then that's not evolution, is it?
I'm sorry?
That's not evolution then, is it? Nothing's evolving, you just get new things.
Depends on your definition for evolution, and this is where it gets deceptive. What is the definition for evolution? Change over time. Do we believe in change over time? Absolutely. Trust me, I look a whole lot different now than I did 70 pounds ago when I got married. I have changed. Change over time is a reality. But is change over time the same as something coming from nothing? There's the problem. They will use the same term for both. And that's where it gets deceptive. Well, if you believe this and this means this was true, that means this is true. No, 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 no. Let me let Richard Dawkins answer, because I think he does a pretty good job.
Well, it's not from nothing, because it's from an antecedent species, and even the evolutionary process, the process that Darwin discovered, didn't start from nothing. It had to start from, well, a reasonably complicated chemical beginning, which was the first self-replicating molecule. You can't, natural selection can't get going until you have genetics, and so you've got to have genetics. And that's not a trivial problem, and it's a problem that actually hasn't yet been solved.
Remember what we started off with? Extreme simplicity is what we started off with. Remember? Extreme simplicity. And now we've moved in, and this is his progression. It's not from nothing, because it's from a previous species. That's exactly what I would have said. I was like, oh, no, that's not something from nothing. You still had something that was populating and producing, and that's not nothing. Remember our definition for nothing. Nothing is the absence of something. That's something. Okay? The antecedent species is something. And then he goes on, and he's, I love this. I just love this. It had to start from, well, a reasonably complicated chemical. We just went from extreme simplicity to reasonably complicated chemical beginning, which, by the way, is still something from nothing. Extreme simplicity to, and it gets even better. It gets even better. We can't get going until you have genetics. Anybody want to explain genetics to me? This is a simple thing. Genetics is simple? How many years of college do people have to take to finally understand it and apply it? Farmers, right? You think it's simple? It's not simple in the least. It's very complex. And then it goes, started from a self-replicating molecule. So a self-replicating molecule is extreme simplicity. I know that it's not nothing. I know that. and it is not extreme simplicity. Let me take you to an interesting article, non-Christian article here, Short, Sharp Science. Biologists create self-replicating RNA molecule. Carl, see, it's possible. You can create a self-replicating molecule, extreme simplicity. This proves that evolution is true. How would you argue against this before I even get into the article? What's that?
You have a creator.
Create requires
the RNA molecule.
And create requires creator. And they had something to begin with. They had an RNA molecule that they tweaked. How much intelligence went into all that tweaking? I don't think the guy that did all the tweaking is going to say, well, none. I mean, he's kind of cutting himself out of the picture. You know what I'm saying? Well, no intelligence went into this. What are you saying about yourself? How much money, how much energy went into something like this? A lot. And what did they end up proving? It doesn't have a very sexy name, but TC19Z, synthesized in a lab in Cambridge, could be a version of one of the first, could be? Did you catch that? Critically evaluate what you read. I'm just saying, all right? Until now, the only RNA copying RNA was a molecule called R18, which can only copy RNA segments up to 14 letters long and only works on certain sequences. It's like a word processor that can copy and paste turnip, but not Swede. I got to go again on this one because I'm not quite getting how this is strengthening your position. And there's more. Hollinger set out to improve R18. Anybody see a problem? He had something, and he's improving it. As a minimum, this is intelligent design. As a minimum, right? I mean, as a minimum. That's not naturalistic processes. That's not this thing just having some mutation and turning into something else. It doesn't support that. After several rounds of copying variants and looking for new improvements, he found several useful tweaks, which he incorporated into his final patchwork enzyme TC19Z. Crucially, TC19Z can copy pieces of RNA that are almost half as long, 48%, as itself. Anybody see a problem? If an RNA enzyme is to copy itself, it has to be able to copy sequences as long as itself, and TC19Z is closing in on that goal. Hold up a second. What's the headline say? Biologists create a self-replicating RNA molecule. What have they actually done? Something that can only do 48% of itself? After all their intelligence and all of their work? I read this article and I'm sitting there just saying, oh, come on, no. And then I read the comments below, because this is not a Christian site, all right? And the non-Christian who was commenting on this, take a listen to what he had to say. I love this. Is this article accurately titled Biologists Create Self-Replicating RNA Molecule, when in the penultimate paragraph I'm told it can only replicate half its length? Isn't that a bit like saying mechanic builds self-assembling car in Australia and then finding only half of it is being built when I get there? I could have saved my ticket money for when it could fully build. I was really annoyed. Why did I have to almost finish the article before I knew the title was wrong? How can I trust your titles ever again, new scientist? Non-Christian wrote that. I thought it was a fair critique. So this whole thing about first life, the search for the first replicator, self-replicating molecules, they're simple, extreme simplicity. Life must have. You Christians, all you have is faith. All you have is faith. You have a God. You believe in this God and you have faith. Look, anytime you need must have, we think maybe, could be, you have faith. Christians and non-Christians both have faith. And we both place our faith in something that has existed for all eternity and has three letters. It begins with the letter G. Choose the one that you would like. There's consequences to decisions. Why? Why did it have to? And now we think we know how to make one. What? We think? This is extreme simplicity, okay? Extreme simplicity. This is easy stuff. Why can't we make them? Biologists create that was what they were talking about. And by the way, here's my point. If it's extreme simplicity, why can't we make one? And by the way, we can't. So, I'm skipping over some of the other self-replicating molecule things. Basically, it says, they don't have one. Can't make them. I love this headline, New Scientist, Imagination. Why we spend so much time exploring realities that don't exist? And this is one of them. He continued on. But starting from extreme simplicity, because if it was extreme simplicity, we would be able to make it. And I made that point. Let's go on to the next clip.
Well, in fact, actually, that's kind of interesting, because it's true that many people think that evolution has to do with the origin of life, but it's really the origin of the diversity of life.
Hold up. Interesting. So evolution doesn't deal with the origin of life. No, it doesn't. If you read any writing that they have to say, no, that doesn't deal with that. That's why that guy said it doesn't matter. It could be this, it could be this, it could be this. It doesn't. We don't deal with that. We just take it back to like one billionth of a second after everything exploded, and that's when we come into play. But that still doesn't deal with how you get something from nothing, because you had something that exploded. All right? And here's why it doesn't deal with the origin of life. Let me take you to another video, Expelled. You guys have seen this, right? It's an old one, but it's extremely good. I love it. If you have a copy, if you guys have it in your library and you haven't watched it, please watch it. Because in here, they have a great interview where Ben Stein asks about how do you get from dead thing to life. This is why they don't deal with it, because I want you to hear what happens when they do deal with it.
How did we get from inorganic world to the world of the cell?
Well, one popular theory is that it might have started off on the backs of crystals.
Okay, so how did we get from dead thing to living thing? The backs of crystals. Where did the crystals come from? We don't deal with that. But we have molecules and we have crystals, okay? And this is how life began. Let them finish.
Molecules piggybacked on the back of crystals forming, and that this led to more and more complex. But of course, the nice thing about crystals is every now and then you get mistakes, mutations, and that this opens the way for natural selection.
See how simple it is? This is how you get life from non-life. You start with molecules that are piggyback on the backs of a crystal, and that crystal has a deformation, and that causes a mutation on the molecule. Then the molecule changes and becomes us. I see a bunch of skeptical faces. Here, watch.
But at one point there was not a living thing.
Yeah.
And then there was a living thing. How did that happen?
Well, this is the... I just told you.
You know, we laugh at that, but you know what the reality is? How many kids are going into university and they're getting a professor like this who's doing that exactly to them, and you know what's happening to them in the university? Look, I'm telling you right now, I was on the road a lot last year, and every college age group that I spoke to last year, every one of them without the exception of any of them, I ask a question. How many of you in here today on first day in one of your university classes had a professor that said, are there any Christians in here? And if any hands went up, they got one of two responses. Pick your books up, get out of here. I'm not wasting my breath on you. Number two, we'll see about that by the end of this class. I didn't have one group of college age kids that I spoke with last year that did not have someone have that happen to them. In my country, these guys are very aggressive. And they're very mean-spirited, and they will mock and they will ridicule, and once they, they'll chew you up and spit you out. You laugh at this, but this guy's tearing people apart.
I don't see any reason why you shouldn't go from very simple to more and more complex to more and more complex.
I don't either, but I don't know how you get from mud to a living cell. That's my question.
Yes, well, I've told you.
I think it was on a
try one more time.
On the backs of crystals.
On the backs of crystals is at least one hypothesis, yes.
So that's your theory, and you think that is more likely and less far-fetched than intelligent design?
I think it is.
Can I give you one more big Guys, this is why they don't deal with the origin of life. Because when that's the best that you got, you don't sound too good.
Yes,
and in fact, the famous final paragraph of his book, it basically tries to state that.
Yes, you have to start from a genetics, and That's one of the big gaps in our knowledge at the moment. Nobody knows how that started. The laws of chemistry somehow had to give rise to a self-replicating molecule. Once you've got that, at least a sufficiently accurately self-replicating molecule, then evolution takes off.
It's simple. That's all it takes. Once we got that self-replicating molecule, brother, it's on. You have to start with genetics. Again, that's not extreme simplicity. That's pretty tough, okay? The laws of chemistry gave rise to a self-replicating molecule. Please, somebody explain that to me. How would you combat that? How would you challenge? How would you just encourage somebody to think about what they're saying in this? Because you're going to hear this over and over again. The laws of quantum mechanics, the laws of gravity, the laws of this, the laws of that require that life had to happen. How would you answer challenge or just get somebody to think about that question or that statement?
More specific, which law of chemistry?
Okay. Well, what if they could give you the specific law?
They can't.
Say they can't. For the sake of argument, they have the law of chemistry that says this law right here proves that it gave rise to a self-replicating molecule.
Isn't there a law of thermodynamics that says that everything decreases in general?
The law of thermodynamics decreasing entropy?
Well, if it's a law and we still haven't managed to make it work since we discovered it, then how come it happened before we discovered
it? See, I love that kind of... go ahead, ma'am.
I just say, where does the law come from?
Where does the law come from? Laws require, creator requires, and I love that. I think that's a valid argument, ma'am.
And he's also just contradicting himself. He just said we don't have a self-replicating.
That's right.
Can I ask you a question? I don't know whether you've ever read George Orwell's Animal Farm.
Yeah.
In it, the pig who was responsible for the notice used to come regularly to slightly change it until the whole message was changed. Is that what we're doing?
In a way. But I think it's more complex than that. What I've seen, I read a really interesting article a number of years back where they said, what scientists is doing is that it's becoming so enclosed, you have to go through the training, you have to go through, learn the whole terminology, learn how to speak the speak, or else you can't critique it. And so it's become a closed society. And unless you go through the system, you can't critique. And once you've gone through the system, you're pretty much, anybody watch the Star Trek? Watch Star Trek? The Borg, you know what I'm talking about? The Borg assimilates everything. And that's kind of what happens once you go through the system, you get assimilated.
Because didn't he mention aliens at one point?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. He's okay with aliens, but it can't be God. So, ma'am.
If you said to him when he said, oh, just need some genetics, if you said something to him like, genetics is extremely complicated.
Yeah.
Which side would...
Oh, he's already admitted that.
Yes, so we just say, remind genetics is very complicated.
Yeah, he's already admitted that, so yeah. Here's a way that I like to approach it. Again, there's not my way is the only way. There's a lot of ways to deal with these things. That's why I like to bring ideas out, because I'm going to steal some of your ideas. I will. This is the California Penal Code. Just a few of the books. There's a lot more books, okay? This is the law in California. And you cannot believe this. But you need to see that this law, it actually built this prison that is unbelievable. It's state of art. I mean, that law all by itself built this prison and has... Do you see what I'm saying to you? Do laws create anything? Laws don't create anything. We just discovered laws, okay? And a law requires a lawgiver. You can have all the laws in the world and it's not going to make a single... prison. You're still going to need somebody that's got to get in there and start bending metal and laying brick.
You already have to have something to legislate on.
Yep. And you're going to have something to legislate on to write the laws about. So when people start throwing out these laws of quantum mechanics and the laws of gravity and the laws of this, laws don't create anything. They explain things. They don't create.
And what we've learned is remarkably this question, which is in the sense of cosmology, in my mind, the last bastion of those people who feel there must be a creator, is the fact that it is plausible, based on everything we now know, that a universe could come from nothing. Now, that doesn't mean it did come from nothing any more than Darwin's argument implied that life absolutely originated by chemistry. We don't know that yet. Similarly, we can't prove that the universe arose from nothing, but the discoveries in physics and cosmology have led us to realize it's increasingly plausible. And I find that remarkable, and we're celebrating.
Anybody got any problems with those statements? It's faith. You can no longer be a reasonable person if you don't accept that something came from nothing. And what did he just get done telling us? We can't prove this and we can't prove that. All these bastions that destroy what we believe, we can't prove that yet. We can't prove that yet. But you're not reasonable for questioning it. This is not an evidence problem. This is a spiritual problem. This is what he said. It is plausible that a universe could come from nothing. What was the name of the book? Not that it's plausible that a universe came from nothing. A universe from nothing. Why there is something instead of nothing. And by the way, you know me by now. Let's define our terms. Can somebody define plausible for me, please? I went to the dictionary. Thank you very much. Plausible. Possibly true. Believable or realistic. It gets better. Full definition. Superficially fair, reasonable or valuable, but often specious. By the way, do you know what specious meant? I had to look that word up too. Something that looks good but isn't. Superficially pleasing or persuasive. A swindler. When I was here before, they called me the charlatan. I'm the charlatan, but you got this guy out there selling you a book on something from nothing. And then in the whole thing, he says, well, we can't prove it. We don't have this and nobody. And I'm the charlatan? Appearing worthy of belief. The argument was both powerful and plausible. And by the way, you don't believe me on specious? I did look it up. Here you go. Simple definition. Falsely appearing to be fair, just or right, appearing to be true, but actually... Sir?
This is more psychology than science.
More psychology than science. I would agree with that statement. But again, it's more belief. It's not a science issue. It's a worldview issue. That doesn't mean that it did come from nothing. Then why are you selling me the book? Any more than Darwin's argument implied that life absolutely originated by chemistry. Oh, we are getting down to the core. We don't know that yet. And it is not reasonable to believe that there's another possibility. That instead of nothing created something, that something created everything. Similarly, we can't prove that the universe arose from nothing. Then why are we selling this book again? Please help me understand this. There must be evidence. I mean, this guy's not going to go out there and just say these things and not have something to back up his position. There must be evidence for something from nothing. Let's go back to Professor Vilenkin, okay? And take a listen to what he has to say about the evidence for something from nothing.
And it may be that our universe happens to be that happy chance of nothing transforming itself into what seems to be something that seems to persist.
Okay. Happy chance, appears to be something, this just appears to be something. But it may not be something.
Of course, if you ask, is there evidence that the universe began by this spontaneous nucleation out of nothing, I don't think we can produce any evidence for that.
Christians, where's your evidence? Prove to me this, prove to me that. Excuse me, where's your evidence? We both have the same evidence. We just interpret that evidence differently. And which one makes the most sense? Something that created everything or nothing that created everything? I can't make that decision for you. Here's another guy that I found interesting. Professor Weinberg, take a listen to what he had to say.
We have to wait for a non-theistic explanation. Very often you have to wait a long time. But that's what science is. Science is looking for non-theistic explanations of what we see in nature.
Have you ever heard the claim that Christians, you can't do science? Creationists, they don't do science. Do you know why they can say that? Because they've redefined science. Go to an 1828 dictionary. It's free of charge on the internet. Just do a Google search, 1828 dictionary. It will come up. Type in the word science. Take a look at the definition of science in an 1828 dictionary. Compare it with a modern day dictionary for a definition of science. Guess what? The term has evolved. In the realest sense of the word, it has changed. And now you can't do science unless it's non-theistic explanations. What gives them the right to redefine science? Go back and look at the founders of almost every branch of science. What will you find? Not just theists, you'll find creationists who believed in the Lord Jesus Christ. And they said, if you want to understand the Creator, study his creation, because his attributes will be in what he created. So study what he made. They came up with science. They founded the principles. They founded the methods. And they weren't rational. I got one guy for you. This guy's a... He doesn't do this show anymore. Have you ever heard of Stephen Colbert? He was kind of big in America. He's now got a late night talk show. And is very different from what he did before. But he got... In this program, I don't believe that he really believed what he talks about on the show. It was a character that he basically played, but he did a very good job at it. I would never want to be interviewed by this guy, I can tell you that. He interviewed Lawrence Krauss. Let me just show it to you. It's kind of long. It's about 6 minutes long, but it's worth it.
Welcome back, everybody. My guest tonight is a cosmologist whose new book is about why there is something instead of nothing. I'm guessing because his publisher gave him a deadline. Please welcome Lawrence Krauss. Hey, Dr. Krauss, thanks so much for coming on. All right, sir, let's get the CV out here because it is not unimpressive.
Thank you.
Okay, you are a cosmologist?
That's not a cosmetologist.
Not a cosmetologist. Okay, because I was going to ask you for a mani-pedi. Okay. A theoretical physicist, and you're the director of Origins Project at Arizona State University. The new book is called A Universe from Nothing. Why There Is Something Rather Than Nothing. A book about the ultimate question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, doctor. Sweep away thousands of years of mystery and awe at creation that let the greatest minds in civilizations all over the world to lead to one point, a single divine loving creator. Destroy it. Why is there something instead of nothing?
It's really easy because nothing's unstable. And in fact, there's no evidence for any deity. Everything we know about the laws of physics, which are remarkable and have changed everything but the way we think about the universe, what nothing is and what something is. This table here is mostly empty space.
This table cost me $500. Well, you tell me I got ripped off? Well, no, wait, let's go back a second, okay? Nothing is unstable. What do you mean that nothing is unstable? Nothingness is nothingness.
Well, the physics has changed what we mean by nothing. In fact, nothing is a empty space, is a boiling, bubbling brew of virtual particles popping in and out of existence.
Oh, wait,
so
no,
fast,
that's not nothing. That's something. Why are those virtual particles there?
Because of the laws of quantum mechanics. And they tell us that even though you can try and count and see what's in there in empty space, you'll see nothing. But in fact, one of the biggest mysteries, and the reason I wrote the book, one of the greatest discoveries of the last 50 years is that, in fact, empty space weighs something.
Empty space weighs something.
In fact, it's the dominant stuff in the universe.
I am never going to lose those last 5 pounds.
Never. And in fact, it's worse because, in fact, unlike normal stuff, you may have learned in high school that gravity sucks, but in fact, it doesn't. With empty space, it's repulsive. And that empty space is forcing the universe to expand ever faster, faster and faster.
So the nothingness is forcing us apart.
It's forcing us apart. Well, we're not going to be forced apart, but the galaxies are.
Okay, you say you haven't been rubbing any of that baby shampoo on your head, have you? With the THC in it?
Well,
no?
No comment.
You're clean? Leave me a hair sample. We'll check it later. All right. So, okay, you say there are three different types of nothing.
That's right.
What are the three? I didn't know there was such a variety. A sampler platter of
nothing. I would have thought
nothing.
You'd be an expert on it. But
on
in any
nothingness?
Case,
yes.
In any case, there are three different kinds of nothing. First, empty space, which I'd say is probably the nothing of the Bible, an eternal, dark, empty void.
Do you mean like a true, hard vacuum?
Exactly.
That would be, that's nothing that you're talking about?
Most of people would have thought that would be nothing.
That's what I think nothing is.
And then I
also,
tell you that,
Baltimore.
But then if I tell you that that kind of nothing actually is unstable, if you wait long enough, that kind of nothing will always produce particles.
Well,
it will always produce something.
By saying that it will,
If you wait long enough, the laws of quantum mechanics tell us that particles will burp out of empty space and eventually fill up a universe. It's really remarkable.
Is it, that, to me, that sounds like the empty space may be empty to us, but it is some sort of sheath or membrane between us and some other reality.
No, there's nothing. Well, there's absolutely nothing there until there's something.
What's the second type of nothing?
Okay, well, then if you don't buy that, then I could say, well, you might say, well, that's not nothing because there's space.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out if you apply quantum mechanics to gravity, then, in fact, space itself becomes dynamical, and universes, spaces themselves, and time can pop into existence where there was none before.
So in some theoretical end space, before the moment
Sounds
of creation,
mm-hmm.
there can be no time and no space and no energy?
And no energy. Zero
energy.
And
then suddenly, from nowhere and from nothing, comes something and somewhere.
And all sorts of stuff. And it sounds like the ultimate free lunch. And
yes,
it is.
It is.
It is. And it really, and what's remarkable is it's possible without any supernatural shenanigans. And
but listen, stop with that.
Why?
Why is what you're doing, whatever this is? Because obviously, because I am not in the priesthood, I can't understand the scrawls on the blackboards you people down at where are you?
Well, that's why I wrote
where
the book, so you could.
Where are you? Arizona State.
Arizona State.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You priests of theoretical physics,
mm-hmm.
you can explain to each other what you mean with your language of math. And I have to take that on faith.
No, in fact, you should be skeptical.
I am.
And in fact, you should... I know. And that's why you should... That's why I tried to find the arguments in the book.
But I will never read it. So why other people should... You should buy it.
Buying it is important.
Buying is good.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay? But why does what you're saying have to be an attack on my God?
It doesn't have to be an attack.
But that's all you've done. You've attacked my God for the last 6 minutes.
No, you have. All I've said is you don't need him.
That's an attack.
No.
Of course we are here to love God, serve God.
As we understand it, we've changed our minds about the universe. We've learned that the universe is more remarkable than anything we ever thought before. And in fact, changing your mind and, in fact, being wrong is wonderful. You should try it sometime. It's really amazing. It means that the fact that the universe is more remarkable than the fairy tales that were talked about by Bronze Age literate peasants before we knew the Earth orbited the sun.
You're not attacking at all, but go ahead.
So you believe
there's no God?
I don't even use the word believe. The point is there's no need.
There's
no need for God.
Is there God?
What would you say? There's no evidence for God.
Okay.
There's no evidence for God.
So let me ask something. If there is no God,
mm-hmm.
okay, if there is no thing called God, if he is nothing, can't something come from him? Lawrence Krauss, thank you so much. Lawrence Krauss, the universe from God. We'll be right back.
I would not want to be interviewed by that guy, man. And like I said, I don't know if he believes what he's saying or not, because it was a character that he played. But here's the point. I put that up there because I think it gives us some ideas on how we can talk to people as well. It wasn't belligerent, ignorant, mean-spirited, hating, fighting. Look, Christ died for every person on this planet. He loved each and every one of us so much that he died for us. So I will not argue with you. If you disagree with me tonight and you call me what you want, I've been called worse, trust me. I'm not going to argue with you. I'm not going to fight with you. You're going to have to make the decision which one makes the most sense. That's why I show them. I let them speak for themselves. Me personally, I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing it. But you got a choice. You get to choose. In the beginning, God, or in the beginning, nothing. Thank you, Pastor Tony, for letting me be here.